I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, students across the state are planning a pro-Palestine walkout. Can they do it? Will there be consequences? We hear from OSPI also. More money in Washington state is being dedicated to migrants. We'll tell you what it's going to be used for. And Washington state has officially solved its single biggest crisis. We'll talk about it. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. It's Thursday. Hey, I'm just a regular lady with a regular job. I like my last working day of the week. I'm excited for Thursday. It's beautiful out. What's not to be excited about, you know?
I'm very excited about beautiful out.
I signed Nicole up for all sorts of things, but we had a really nice subscriber named Jason who messaged us and just said, hey, I'm going to this event. Do you want to come? A Hillsdale College event that they had in Bellevue last night. And so Nicole and I went and we heard Clay Travis speak, which was really cool. Clay Travis, of course, of OutKick. And he talked about just this wokeness in sports and, you know, men trying to play against women. And he was just a super nice guy with an awesome message. And, you know, just giving advice, I think, similar to what we talk about, is just sane people need to put their foot down and just say, no, you cannot say that you're a woman and participate in athletics against women who you will absolutely crush. So that was really fun. Nicole, see, aren't you glad I invite you to things?
Absolutely.
Invite is loose. It's I signed us up for this. Let's go. So thank you to subscriber Jason for inviting us to come. We really enjoyed
that.
It
really was fun.
And it's so nice to be around other sane people.
We meet some pretty fun people.
Oh my gosh. I was sitting next to the nicest older gentleman named Richard, and we were having debates. He was actually asking questions and genuinely wanted to know my view on some political issues. He said he views Dave Reichert as a rhino, and I told him why I hate the phrase rhino, and I think I convinced him not to use it anymore. So anyway, it was just a fun night. Thank you, Jason, for inviting us. All right. I really think that we're on the precipice of these anti-Israel, pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas protests dying down. Can I go out on a limb there and say that? I think that we're on the precipice of them dying down because some of these individuals are finally starting to see consequences for their actions, whether it's individuals who are arrested for blocking freeways, even in a crazy progressive state like Washington that has a history of not cracking down on those sorts of protests. We saw them scooped up down at SeaTac, 46 of them arrested. And then I will say, let's just start with the positive. Even Google says Google will not abide by this. First of all, these are really ballsy protesters who work at Google. They decided to do a sit-in against Project Nimbus, no tech for genocide. They had the sign. So apparently they're protesting a $1.2 billion contract that involves Israel or whatever it is. So you've got all these Google employees that do a sit-in in their boss's office. Which is like, Nicole, don't even try it. Don't even try it. Well, technically, our office is the same office, so if you are doing a sit-in every day in my office as well.
I'm supposed to be here anyway, but yeah, that hair back there, the girl with the Pippi Longstocking hair.
I saw this all over. I don't even know if that's a woman, but it's somebody with these, like, not even Pippi Longstocking, like, even worse, these big pigtails. I was like, of course. Some of the signs, no more genocide for profit, no cloud apartheid. Don't be evil. Stop retaliation. Here's some of the chanting that happened in this Google sit-in.
Google, you can't hide.
Google, you can't hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
Google, you can't hide.
Google, you can't hide.
You are funding genocide.
You are funding genocide.
Yeah, well, that went over about as well as you would hope it would in a sane world. They're all fired. And so I saw a bunch of different videos about this, but, you know, the internal Google security is like, hey, you know, can you guys get up? We don't want to call the cops, basically. And then, you know, all these officers come in. There were multiple Google different sit-ins across Google in different locations. And so I've seen some videos from different ones, but the one in the boss's office is hilarious to me. Like, mm-hmm. You have to go into that thinking you're going to get fired, right? So this again from New York Post, Google has fired 28 employees over their participation in a 10-hour sit-in at the search giant's offices in New York and Sunnyvale, California to protest the company's business ties with the Israeli government. The Post has learned, quote, they took over office spaces, defaced our property, and physically impeded the work of other Googlers. The head of Google wrote in a memo obtained by the Post, their behavior was unacceptable, extremely disruptive, and made coworkers feel threatened. Behavior like this has no place in our workplace, and we will not tolerate it. It clearly violates multiple policies that all employees must adhere to, including our code of conduct and policy on harassment, discrimination, retaliation, standards of conduct, and workplace concerns. Man, never thought I'd do an applause for Google on the Undivided podcast. It's absurd. And I honestly, when I first saw it, I was like, I wonder if Google will do anything about it. But no, I'm glad that they called it what it is, harassment, discrimination, retaliation. You know, it's funny because the Googlers were saying that, oh, don't retaliate against us. But no, what you're doing is you're trying to retaliate against the company you work for having a business tie to the Israeli government. So I don't know if they went in thinking that they're going to get fired or because, you know, especially in tech and this sort of woke sectors, they allow this sort of stuff and they encourage almost activism, you know, in their ranks. And so maybe these people thought, oh, we can do this and we can do a sit-in in our boss's office and get away with it. Google's like, no, you can't. And immediately, you lost your job immediately. We called the cops on you and everything. So I'm hopeful, even in Seattle, they're like, hey, we got to get them off the interstate because last time it took 5 hours and that didn't go over well. So Seattle's doing that. And then Google's like, yeah, you got to go. And in fact, you're fired. So I think that that's promising. Now let's see whether the Washington public school system can do the same. So our friend Ari Hoffman, who tracks all things anti-Semitism, very good at it, and he gets a lot of, you know, emails and tips in from parents. So there was initially one school on the east side that was going to participate on the 23rd of April in a walkout. And then Ari Hoffman came out and said, well, now Issaquah High School is also going to plan on joining in on this anti-Israel walkout. He tweeted, Hamas supporters are specifically targeting the first day of Passover. So choosing to do it on a notable day for Jewish people, as he pointed out, just like the terrorists did on October 7th. He said Hamasniks previously targeted the area on Hanukkah, and the same activists demanded that Israel stop bombing terrorists on Ramadan. So I guess Muslim holidays are off limits, but Jewish holidays are fair game. And then Ari came out with an update this morning and said, okay, not only is it just these couple schools, it's going to be a statewide walkout. So we don't know at this point how many schools are going to participate, but there is a statewide student walkout planned. It says the goal is end U.S. aid to Israel, end the Israeli occupation, release Palestinian prisoners, one state of Palestine. So this is anti-Semitic, and it is pro-Hamas. Release Palestinian prisoners? So release terrorists? Like, I don't think so. So they're planning this Tuesday, April 23rd at 10:30 a.m. Students of Washington, unite. All schools in Washington state are welcome and encouraged to participate. As students, we create the foundation for the future, and our voices cannot be silenced. Let your voice ripple through your community in support of the Palestinian people. If you are a student who would like to organize a structured walkout at your school, reach out for assistance and resources. And it ends with this, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Again, this is blatant anti-Semitism. Some of the phrases in there are blatantly supporting terrorism. Now, I tend to think a lot of the students who participate in these things have no clue in the world what they're talking about. Absolutely no idea in the world. It's like, this is the new far left thing and we're going to do it. I mean, how many different reasons have Seattle public school students walked out? A climate, whatever it is, anti-policing, all this stuff. So yeah, now they're just doing what the socialists tell them to do. So we wanted to know what are the policies on this? I mean, I think the approach from faculty, from staff, from administrative officials would vary wildly district to district. I mean, in Seattle public schools, I'm sure they encourage it and they're not going to get in trouble and the teachers will walk out with them. But when you get, you know, if you've got schools who want to participate, I think it was Wenatchee had a school that was participating in something that really surprised me. I'm like, gosh, out in Wenatchee. So we did reach out. Nicole reached out this morning to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, and they did provide us a short statement, but then they linked to a longer sort of policy that they put out that sort of is supposed to give schools a gauge for how they are supposed to respond to stuff like this. And I'll say, before I read the whole thing to you, we've sort of reached out for even more clarification, because this long reminder, it's their how to respond to discriminatory harassment policy. Even reading the whole thing, honestly, we're not quite sure whether these walkouts would qualify. But the spokesperson for OSPI told us in an email, thank you for reaching out. We're aware of this student-led effort. We've communicated with school districts to remind them of their obligations to maintain all students' safety at school, including during student-led protests and activism. In late March, we sent the following message out to school district civil rights coordinators on harassment, intimidation, and bullying, and other, they also sent it to other school district leaders. So this is what it says. It says, with rising reports of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and discriminatory harassment against Jewish, Israeli, Muslim, Arab, and Palestinian students, OSPI is sharing reminders about school district obligations to prevent and respond to hate, bias, and discriminatory harassment, including in student-led protests and activism. So they are directing schools to follow their non-discrimination policies and procedures in response to discriminatory harassment. Every student, it says, has the right to a learning environment that is free from discrimination, harassment, intimidation, and bullying. However, to rise to the level of discriminatory harassment that is prohibited under state and federal law, the conduct must include something beyond the mere expression of views, words, symbols, or thoughts that some person finds offensive. It must also be considered sufficiently serious to deny or limit a student's ability to participate in or benefit from the educational program. For this reason, school districts investigating alleged discriminatory harassment should evaluate the conduct from the perspective of a reasonable person in the alleged target's position, considering the circumstances, blah, 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 government, word, sue. But what really strikes me there is, in order to rise to the level of discriminatory harassment, they said it has to go above and beyond mere expression of views, words, or symbols that some people find offensive. So you're telling me that these students could walk out with a swastika or could just march around the school with a swastika and that wouldn't be discriminatory harassment? Because I feel like if I was a Jewish student, that would lead me to believe that my life was in danger, that my security was in danger, and it certainly would lead me to believe that I couldn't participate in the educational process because I wouldn't feel safe at school. So given the language on these flyers that is blatantly anti-Semitic and blatantly pro-Hamas, and you know I don't say, I have been willing and able to draw a line between being concerned about the civilian deaths in Gaza and pro-Hamas. This is just pro-Hamas and it's anti-Semitic. So that in and of itself, if they're going to be out there chanting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, one state of Palestine, and the Israeli occupation, something that's all those things suggesting that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, that to me should rise to the level of discriminatory harassment or at least get some students suspended. So we've seen it from a law enforcement perspective improve when people are, again, yes, doing a peaceful protest, but in a way that hinders other people's rights. Google's like, nah, yeah, you can't do that. You're fired. So I'm very curious how the Seattle Public School District or how the Washington State Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction will deal with this and how individual districts will deal with this on April 23rd. So stay tuned for that. All right, a story I want to get to out of the city of Seattle. Of course, Sarah Nelson is being criticized. The one sane council president we have in forever. And of course, everything she does is being criticized. Now, look, you know that I am all for government accountability. If you're doing something wrong or nefarious, yeah, you need to be held accountable for that. I just find it fascinating, all the other crazy stuff that previous council members have done. Just get either no mention or just little blips in the Seattle Times. I mean, think of all the wild stuff Shama Sawant did. And it's like, that's Shama Sawant. She's doing her thing. Oh, no, Sarah Nelson, who I don't know if you knew, but she's a co-owner of Fremont Brewing. So the Seattle Times does this big, long story on whether a business dealing that Fremont Brewing has right now might be a conflict of interest for Sarah Nelson. And Nicole and I were looking at this. It's like, of course, when you're a sane councilwoman who doesn't want to, like, hook, line, and sinker into the progressive policies, people are just going to find ways find ways to discredit you, find ways to criticize you. But just in, for the sake of argument and, you know, government accountability, let's read into this a little bit. Headline, Seattle hospitality giant buys into city council members Fremont Brewing. On Monday, Seattle Hospitality Group announced it was taking a controlling stake in Seattle-based Fremont Brewing. The beer maker was co-founded by Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson, who continues to own a portion of the company. In an email Tuesday, City Council spokesperson Joseph Peja said Nelson, quote, was not involved in the negotiations over the sale of the stake in Fremont Brewing. As is common practice, President Nelson continues to consult with Wayne Barnett from the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission about when it's appropriate to recuse herself from any potential or perceived conflict of interest. Though Nelson formally stepped away from all involvement with Fremont Brewing upon taking office in 2022, according to a statement at the time from a city council spokesperson, she will continue to exert considerable influence over policies that could affect businesses such as the Seattle Hospitality Group. Nelson, who became council president in January, has signaled a more business-friendly approach and is seen as having greater influence after a slate of centrist candidates won seats last fall on a council that had previously tilted more progressive. So basically, since she's a businesswoman who's successful and doesn't kowtow to progressives, like, oh, this is probably, there's probably something wrong with this.
She should have no say in anything she's, business.
She's literally,
that's ridiculous.
She's doing her, I mean, she's doing what she's supposed to be doing by all accounts. And I mean, the Seattle Times does point that out. You know, she stepped away when she took office from all her involvement with Fremont Brewing besides owning, you know, a stake in it. And she has been consulting the Ethics Commission about, before anything happens, hey, you know, what do I have to do or not do? So it seems like she's doing everything right. So it's much ado about nothing. And it is true that she is a councilwoman who's pro-business because she comes from a business background. And yes, she's going to influence policies around Seattle's business climate. That's fine. I want her to do that. I want her as a business owner and someone who actually knows the struggles and challenges that businesses are under. I want her to influence the business climate. And yeah, if she improves the business climate in Seattle, she's also improving the business climate for Fremont Brewing. And that's fine. And that's a good thing, too. She's improving the business climate for the hospitality industry, which is absolutely tanked in Seattle. Not just because of the pandemic, but the crime and the disorder. I mean, I had been talking about this issue as a mainstream journalist in Seattle for a decade. The hospitality industry in downtown Seattle was very concerned about some of the issues that were popping up around homelessness and substance abuse and crime that was making it so visitors didn't feel safe here. So, like, we should be celebrating this. We got a business person who wants to improve the business climate. Yeah, she has a dog in the fight. By all means, improve the business climate for everyone and improve the business climate for yourself, Councilwoman Sarah Nelson. No problem in the world with that. We've got your back. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable. Asylum seekers, man, it's amazing what you'll get if you just ask the government for a handout. And I really think working class people should take a page from that playbook and show up at council meetings and say, hey, I don't have enough money for food. I don't have enough money for housing. Can I get a free handout from you as well? We'll talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. First, I have encouraged you over and over and over to take the FirstMark Challenge because we all need insurance. Why not have someone in your corner like FirstMark, a local company that you're never going to pay, but that's going to go out there and advocate on your behalf to insurance companies, making sure you get the best product, you get the best price. And a lot of you have listened, including our friend Ben Bailey, who is a fan of our show, who decided he was going to take the FirstMark Challenge too.
Overall savings, if I look at the four different policies that we, you know, we've initiated here as of last week. So we're saving about $1,500 a year, which is pretty substantial. The bulk of that being in homeowners, but also, you know, also the auto policy came down a bit.
Ben Bailey, by the way, first of all, if you're not supporting our sponsors, do you really love us? Because you know what? Ben has already supported three of our sponsors. He did Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. He and his wife lost like 80 pounds combined or something like that, something crazy. And then he also signed up for a Bulwark Capital Know Your Risk Review.
Look at that.
I mean, come on. And now he's doing FirstMark Insurance and he had fantastic results from it because it really is a no-brainer. So if you, maybe you got a renewal for your insurance and it went way up and you're like, I can't do this anymore, reach out to FirstMark, do the FirstMark Challenge, FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, maybe you're not fired, Nicole. I got to decide after the show whether you'll be fired because we need to get through the rest of the show. Okay, King County keeps throwing money at asylum seekers, but they still have no end game. They have no long-term plan for them. They don't know what they're going to do with them. They certainly aren't going to speak out about what's happening at the southern border so we can stop all these asylum seekers who may or may not have legitimate claims from coming here and sucking up millions of dollars that were intended for homeless people already living on our streets. Can't do that. But let's just throw money at the problem and see if it gets better. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So as you know, we have probably at this point more than 1,000 asylum seekers who have come to Washington State from our current crisis at the southern border. Might be more, but kind of that was like the last check of where we're at. And we've done some stories here and there. You know, there was a church in South King County that was trying to take them in. Asylum seekers have been in council chambers with their far left Democratic Socialist allies who are using them as political pawns to get what they want. And then there was arrests at Seattle Council Chambers. So there's been all these crazy things around this. And the bottom line is, it's like, kind of, I will acknowledge, it's kind of a difficult position for the state of Washington and for the taxpayers. Because they're here, they came, we can't control entirely what happens at the southern border. So now they're here. And now they are either what, going to be living on the streets and folding into the homeless industrial complex, where we'll probably spend $1 million a person just to keep them in homelessness, or you're going to try to put them in a hotel or something. So at this point, I'm almost like, well, I guess you got to put them in a hotel, because or else they're going to get some sort of services for even more money through the industrial complex. But I think the issue is there is no game plan here, other than just to throw your money at this issue. So this is from the Seattle Times. King County has awarded another $2 million. To nonprofits helping asylum seekers in Tukwila. This is just in Tukwila. $2 million. So they're going to pay local nonprofits. You're going to pay. Taxpayers are going to pay. King County's going to pay. Local nonprofits to help homeless asylum seekers staying in or near Tukwila. The money is part of $5 million allocated in December for South King County cities to deal with homelessness. So again, this is money that's coming from an already failed homeless response. So this was given in South King County cities when they got this $5 million. I'm sure they had plans to use it for some of the existing homeless crises. And now it's like, well, $2 million of that has to go to these asylum seekers. Sorry to put that on your plate. It says the recent surge in asylum seekers, more than 1,000 people have registered with the Tukwila Church since April of last year, has created a great need for temporary housing. As they wait months for the federal government to approve work permits, asylum seekers cannot legally earn money to pay for housing. One asylum seeker, Jonathan Lutumba, said at the King County Courthouse last month that he walked across 10 countries to get to the United States just to find suffering when he arrived. Apparently not good enough for him here either. Walked through 10 countries, didn't find any of those suitable. Doesn't find this one suitable either. State funding totaling $32 million will also be available in July to provide housing assistance, support for food, transportation, education, and employment, as well as connection to legal services and help navigating social services. Do you think for one second that if lifelong taxpayers of the state of Washington, who could also use housing assistance, support for food, help with transportation and the increased cost of gas, help with employment, connection to legal services, help navigating social services. Do you think if they showed up at the King County Council meetings or the Seattle City Council meetings and shut them down and protested, that they could get some handouts from the government too? No, but also they wouldn't want them. Hardworking taxpayers who get two jobs, two incomes, and they still are crushed under the weight of taxes from the government, from Washington State. Hey, they can't go and ask for handouts, and they wouldn't because they're too proud to. But it's like, if you're a migrant and you show up and you've got these far left entities that are going to go to the council chambers and cause a disruption, and then all of a sudden that's rewarded with money, money to local nonprofits. What did we talk about on the show yesterday? How local nonprofits in the area of homelessness get money and just squander it away. Talked a story yesterday about a guy who misspent $330,000 and helped virtually no one. So they're given this money. Do you really think it's going to help the number of asylum seekers that it should help? It's just all such a disaster. And the question is, will it be good enough? Will it be enough? Will $2 million or $30 million or $100 million, will a tiny home or a hotel or hell, an affordable apartment, will that be enough for some of these asylum seekers? Because in other areas of the country, what's been given by the taxpayers of the United States has not been enough for the migrants who came here claiming asylum. In New York City, for example, Migrants are saying the food's not good enough. We have no access for our children to education. And what the city of New York is giving them just won't cut it. Here's a clip.
At the shelter, the food, my kids cannot eat the food at the shelter.
Kasuma edo men sonji no motta paske tabi kadi horu gongol artay kiki de taba nyamete on ababata mu nyamude.
And on Ramadan time, we couldn't eat because when you come back for on the breaks, the food is no good at all. And they give us 2 months to stay at the shelter, and then you have to go out again with your luggages and the kids and find another place. It's very difficult. And also, I have a kid that is like 18 to 19. Until now, he doesn't have no school.
Okay, well, all right, you came here expecting a better life. Apparently, America has thoroughly disappointed you. Food's not good. The educational opportunities aren't good. The shelter that you're in isn't good. So what does New York City do when migrants come and they just don't like what's being offered? Well, they'll just send them somewhere else, like this Russian migrant who's ready for a new vibe. So he's getting a free ticket to Chicago.
Yes, they give me a ticket for free to Chicago. I fly tomorrow.
For free?
For free.
Why are you going to Chicago?
I try to find any work because I'm homeless immigrant from Russian Federation. Yo, my name is Mark Mirian.
You're from Russia?
Yeah.
Who gave you the ticket to go to Chicago?
Chicago, no, this special government service company, you know, they try to help new people, new immigrants who come.
You're excited to go to Chicago?
Yeah, because I want to see new city. It will be, I want to feel new vibe. A new atmosphere, and maybe try to find new contacts, new friends.
So
you know,
you were in New York for 1 year,
yes.
And now you got a free ticket, and now you're going to go to Chicago.
Da. And then after Chicago, I'm going to Los Angeles because it was my first city in my life before New York.
Did you get a free ticket to go to Los Angeles as well?
Yes, if I ask them. But at this moment, I have like one friend in Chicago. And it will be new experience for me, you know.
So you stayed in New York for a year, then you're going to go to Chicago, yeah. And then you want to go to L.A.
Yeah, I try to get any work to Chicago to collect, you know, and to fly to... But maybe something happens with me in Chicago. Maybe I find good work, good friends, and I will be living in Chicago. So I don't know about future.
Going to Chicago for a new city and a new vibe, man. Just jet-setting across the country to the biggest cities in the U.S. Just looking for new vibes on the taxpayer dime. New York, Chicago, L.A.'s next. Big dreams. Does that, you know, working-age, strapping, young Russian man look like he's here on some desperate asylum claim? Like he's fleeing some sort of violence or poverty? I mean, not to me. At some point, we have to see through the ridiculousness of this, and we also have to see how offensive it is to people who are coming here from other countries who are truly, truly worthy of seeking asylum here, who truly, truly meet the criteria, who are fleeing situations so horrible that we should welcome them in our country. It's our mandate to welcome them with open arms. But now you have all these other people, like that young man from Russia, taking advantage of our policies, taking advantage of what should be limited generosity, and jet-setting across the country with it, demanding better food, better housing, joining protests that disrupt our city councils and our county councils, demanding your money at a time when Washingtonians are struggling, at a time when Americans are struggling. At a time when the cost of living is high, when the cost of gas is high, when the cost of food is high. No help for you. No help for you. But the kid from Russia who wants a new vibe, he can get free tickets around the country. Unfreaking believable. All right, coming up next, we'll check in with... We actually have a double Florida report today. I'll explain that coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones says, if you're thinking about selling your home in 2024, but maybe you're waiting to see what happens with interest rates, you can get started on some of the work now save you stress down the line. So for instance, they have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. If you know you didn't make a few cosmetic updates to your home just to make sure it's better and better shape when it hits the market and you get a better better offers for it, you can go to sellwithwest.com right now, sellwithwest.com, talk to them about that service. They can even help you pay for those cosmetic updates up front. And then, hell, if the Fed does drop interest rates, which West Jones thinks is likely before the election at least a couple times, then you are well positioned to get your home on the market right away. If they drop interest rates, that's going to be a nice little rush, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, we're having a rush right now. And when rates drop, you know, assuming that they do, it's going to pick up, you know, even more. And if you want to take advantage of that, it's probably a great time to start that conversation right now. You know, whether you want to sell in the later in the spring, sometime in the summer, or even the fall. If you want to sell in 2024, you know, we're here to start a conversation with you.
Yeah, so check out sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com. Start by using their home value calculator just to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, we are Florida on the show today. And then I'm getting ready for a Florida vacation, so I got Florida on the brain. So let's start by checking in on my sister in the Sunshine State. It is our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Greetings. All right, let's start with some DeSantis news. Not just Ron, also Casey.
Yes,
we've got a little twofer on the DeSantis front. So there's all these controversies about books and book bans and what books should be in schools, which I think is a worthy conversation. In Washington, we have a lot of books that do not belong in schools that are, you know, borderline pornographic in nature. And so I think there's conversations there. This is really interesting. So Ron DeSantis has signed a bill into law that will basically say, look, if you don't have children in public schools, you can't file all these challenges about books you don't like in the classroom.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of like this because it kind of narrows the focus down to maybe legitimate complaints. Because if somebody does have a kid in a school, I think that their voice should have a little bit more weight in the argument. And it also just kind of like reduces a little bit of the noise around the issue. I think it would be easy to recruit a bunch of people to make much ado about something when maybe only a fraction of those complaints are people with children that are even affected by this.
Yeah, and I mean, so there's a little bit of both ways here because everyone pays taxes for the school system. And so I think everyone has a dog in the fight and in making sure that our kids are, like society at large benefits from kids who are well-educated. So this doesn't ban it completely, but basically it says currently any Floridian can challenge, this is from the Tampa Bay Times, however many books they want, but starting July 1st, the new law will cap the number of book challenges that residents without kids in school can file to one per month. And that is that not enough? Like one per month? Is somebody really spending time like challenging more than one book per month? That
probably.
Person needs a life. So really, this bill is helping people just take their life back.
Yeah, absolutely. And this bill also kind of reinforces the literature that is in school and prevents teachers and other school officials from like not allowing children to access books that are part of the curriculum. So I think it's kind of a nice, well-rounded bill to have just to reinforce what he's, you know, the bill that he already signed into place about book bans, but also just like keep it a little bit more focused on what's important. And that's what kids do have access to in school and what they're learning.
Yeah. And one of his quotes was, let's stop playing games with all of this. And I agree. It's like, gosh, I mean, the culture wars, some of them are very important. I think critical conversations that we need to have, but it's become pretty out of control. And it's like, let's just be adults and reasonable about what makes sense for kids, depending on the grade and the age. And let's not go too far afield on the left or the right. Okay. Casey DeSantis, so Ron DeSantis's wife, which a lot of people have said for years, she's sort of the mind behind Ron DeSantis and keeps him on the straight and narrow. Turns out Republicans in Florida think that maybe she ought to be more than just the first lady of Florida.
Yeah, they definitely think that she would be a great contender for the next governor's race, which would put a DeSantis dynasty in place, I guess, down here. People down here really like her. She is always present. She's always involved in a lot of community service type work, just like I think a lot of like first ladies of the state usually are. But I don't know. We'll see. She hasn't made any official announcements, of course, because I think DeSantis is still with us until 2027.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But I personally like her. I don't know much of her, you know, political experience, but, you know, she would have a great partner at her side to help lead her through it, I guess.
Yeah. So DeSantis is going to term limit out, unlike Washington, where you can be governor for just as long as you'd like. Lucky us, Jay Inslee. And it said, this is from a local news station there, WPTV, that there was a hypothetical matchup polling for GOP voters who they would support over Casey DeSantis or Matt Gaetz, and they chose Casey DeSantis. So that's interesting. I mean, I'm not a fan of Matt Gaetz, so I certainly wouldn't go in that direction. He's Looney Tunes. But I don't like the family legacy political dynasties like the Bidens and the Clintons and the Bushes. It's like, man, okay, the same family doesn't need two governors in a row. I guess give it to who would be the best governor. So if that's her, I mean, I tend to doubt that that's the only option, but not a big fan of political dynasties that are families.
I agree.
All right. Nicole forced us to put this story in. Literally. No, I like this story. So Florida man firing a gun near his neighbors. Cops show up and he's got two cold beers in his hands. Let's actually, we got video of it. So let's play.
And opening his window and telling me he was going to shoot me right in front of the car. You see what I mean?
Your name's Brett?
Yes, sir.
All right. Stay right there. All right.
Beer.
Stay right there.
I'm cracking this beer. Okay.
Yeah, I'm Coy 4. I'm talking to him now. He just has two beers in his hand.
This beer is cold, sir. I want to drink it. Come check me. I'm not going to get in.
I got you. Just for right now, we're just going to stay right here, all right?
Well, I want to drink this beer. Is that cool?
Keep your hands up for me, though. Keep your hands up for me. Right there to that trash can. Yep.
I mean, if I was this officer, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, it's drink it while it's cold, you know? Drink it while you got it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is hot in Florida. Nothing better than a nice, refreshing beer, especially when you're possibly facing having to go to jail for the night. But I think that this story is not just a good Florida man story. This just sounds like a good old fashioned American man story in a way. But I don't know. I think it's kind of funny.
I mean, as an officer, wouldn't you rather have a guy clearly holding two cold beers so his hands are busy, so you know he's not holding a gun, and it would be more difficult for him to, he'd have to drop the beer to get a gun. I feel like that's actually adding safety to the situation.
Yeah, that's a good de-escalation tactic. Here, hold these beers while we, like, handle the situation.
While we find the gun, you know, whatever it is. But anyway, yeah, he was actually booked. He had no bond, charged with aggravated assault with a firearm, using a firearm while under the influence of alcohol. So, yeah, I mean, don't drink and shoot guns, obviously. All right, Miranda, this time next week, I will be seeing you.
I know. I am so excited for your Florida trip.
Yeah, it'll be a blast. All right. Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
But isn't that a good point I make? If you're an officer and somebody's been firing a gun, but now they have two beers in their hand, wouldn't you be like, just hold those beers? To keep the beers, go ahead and drink the beer. Because then they're not reaching for guns or something. They got the beers.
Yeah, but what happened to the gun?
Well, I think they found it in the house or something
later,
like that.
But
they
the officer doesn't know, though.
I know. But then even if you have a gun on you, but you've got the beers and you want to grab the gun and shoot the officers, you're going to have to drop the thing. So there's an extra step in there. I like it.
The officer actually never says, yes, you can drink that beer, and no, you can't drink that beer. He's very strategic about his wording there. And the guy's like, please, can I drink it? He's asking for permission.
They're cold, sir. They're cold. Very Florida. Speaking of my Florida trip, Mike tried to cancel it.
No.
Yeah. I'm sitting there on the couch, and Mike's like, look, you know, you've got a lot going on. You're moving studios. He's like, you sure you want to go on vacation right as all that's going on? It seems like bad timing. And I looked at him. I'm like, if I don't get a vacation, I will probably quit my job.
I would have called him.
And been yes. Like, no, she needs a vacation. Every day she's telling me I need a vacation.
Well, we all do.
Everybody does. Who else is on vacation? You know who else is in Florida right now? Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. He still agreed to join us for his weekly segment, and we decided to talk about why so many people flee Washington State to retire in Florida. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Oh, good to be back as always. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm slightly offended. as usual, because you are in Florida and you didn't invite either of us to come with you.
Well, so here's the deal. I could have extended an invitation, but that would mean that you'd be hanging out with six kids under the age of 14.
I love that. I don't have, as long as they're not my children, so I don't have to actually have responsibility for them, that's totally fine. What are you, golfing? Because is that a Titleist hat?
Oh, yeah. No, we're squeezing it in. So I'm a golf fanatic, and my boys like to golf. And so we're staying down here. They've got, we've never done the, I'm not an amusement park guy. I'm just not. It's not my shtick. I don't like waiting in lines. I just don't like it. But, you know, my oldest is now 13. And we hadn't been to Disney yet. We hadn't done anything Disney related. And so we decided to finally take the plunge, come down here to Disney World. And then what we do is you kind of strategically squeeze in golf rounds in between park outings. You know, it's like, it's kind of how I maintain my sanity.
Yeah, you know? Don't have mini golf at the amusement park. Same thing, right? Basically.
Yeah, no. No, that's not going to cut it. It doesn't scratch the itch, Brandy.
Yeah, well, we figured we'd talk to you about Florida on the segment today. Since you're in Florida, we just talked to my sister in Florida. I'm going to Florida in a week because, well, do you feel free, more free at this moment?
All jokes aside, my wife and I were talking about this last night, that it's very similar to our experience in Idaho, which is, it just feels like you're going back in time, honestly. The service is so much better. The people are so much more polite. You know, like at home in Washington, I don't want to be like hyperbolic, but sometimes it feels kind of like you're walking around an internment camp. You know what I mean? Like everybody's like, and I don't want to make light of real intern. I'm not saying that, but just like, It's everybody's got this dour attitude, you know, and it's the service stinks. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy for me to see, you know, which one's happier.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not to say Washington's a terrible state. There's a lot of good things. Unfortunately, it could be a lot better, but we have to talk to you about something financial. And Nicole and I were chatting. What makes Florida financially a better place for people to retire? Why do so many retirees go there?
Well, I mean, primarily it's the sun and the weather, right? Yeah. But financially speaking, I mean, we can compare and contrast it with Washington. And for the look, I haven't left Washington yet. I still love it. You know, I love it. It's sad to see what's happening to it. But I'm in an interesting position to talk about this because I see my clients moving to places like Florida all the time, right? Yeah. And the reasons are, they don't have to be here anymore, and they don't want to have to listen to the nonsense. They don't want to have to put up with the crazy politicians. They don't want to deal with onerous tax policy. You know, they want to be somewhere that they believe in, you know, and that believes in them and actually treats them like a valued, you know, it's the odd thing about Washington. I try to explain to people, if you are a net detractor from the public pot, let's say you're homeless or something like that, you get treated with kid gloves. If you are a contributor to the pot, you get looked at with a side eye and a negativity. And you're just like, wait a second. What other business treats its clients like this, right? Like, I'm putting money into the pot and you treat me like I'm a scourge. You know, it's just bizarre. You know, it's but biting the hand. I just don't get it. And you're going to keep seeing capital flight. But I mean, that's why, right? Socially, politically, financially, it's all the reasons.
Yeah. Capital flight, like Jeff Bezos and his millions and millions of dollars to avoid the capital gains tax. So we have talked a lot on the show about Zach and his team and what they specialize in. It's managing risk. So if you're getting close to retirement, maybe you're even in retirement, you want to make sure in this crazy election year that your risk is properly managed. I mean, you only get one retirement, whether you live it out in Washington or in Florida, you want to make sure it's properly protected. So I suggest having a free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. This is what they specialize in. Just make sure that your retirement is not overexposed to risk. No obligation. You can schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, before we get to questions and comments, I want to note that the Washington State Republican Party convention is starting this weekend. And this is an interesting one because they've completely changed what they're doing as a state party, and they're going through a nomination process, one of the reasons they wanted to do this is the 2020 election. And you had like 30 candidates for governor, and Lauren Culp ends up getting through with, gosh, virtually no support. I mean, they divided it up so much. He got through with like, can you see what his results were in the primary election? But like, I want to say it was like 17% or something. And they sent through, because of all the divided up votes, they sent through a candidate who clearly was not going to be able to win. And so they wanted to avoid a situation like that and move to a nominating process at the state convention where you have all these delegates and they choose who the party's going to endorse. And then by the party's own rules, that's who they're going to support financially in the lead up to the primary. Now, candidates were expected, and I guess the party would expect them, if they don't get the endorsement, to drop out or something, but they're under no obligation to. Where this becomes interesting and a little bit scary, weird, odd, I don't know, is in the governor's race right now. It's an interesting situation. I think it's probably very possible that Semi Byrd gets the Republican Party endorsement because he's done a good job at galvanizing and really riling up the Republican base of delegates. What's odd about that is he has no money. He hasn't broken double digits in polling yet, and he has no prospect of beating Bob Ferguson. And so, yeah, he could get the Republican Party support, but that doesn't mean he can win in November. And both Semi Byrd and Dave Reichert have said they're not going to drop out. They haven't said it explicitly, but they've kind of hinted at it. And I expect both of them, regardless of what happens this weekend, to stay in. But what that means for the Republican Party is they're kind of tied. By their own rules, they can't support Dave Reichert's campaign. Now, when Dave Reichert emerges from the primary, then they can support his campaign when it's him and Bob Ferguson, which it will be. That's just common sense. But so they're just kind of screwed, and they're going to have to what? Support Semi Byrd financially, even knowing that it's very unlikely he gets through the primary. So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X this morning whether you support the Washington GOP's new nomination and endorsement method, because I've also heard from some people that, like, this is kind of the opposite of allowing the will of the voters to rule the day. And it's like, why would the party weigh in and get involved in that way before you allow voters in the primary to get involved? And this is kind of split today. There's a lot of people who believe that, yes, this is the right method for the GOP, and many of you are saying no. Let's see, John Hammer and Marina Park says, demonstrating again that the GOP is an expert at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Robert says, I trust my judgment, not theirs. It shouldn't be who can demagogue the loudest, but instead who's more competent. Let's see. Kim says, unite the party before the primary. So there's a lot of disagreement here. Hugh says, terrible. MAGA scores another win at the expense of common sense and Dave Reichert. Y says, yes, more unity the better. However, if Semi Byrd doesn't get the endorsement, he will probably harm chances of Republicans getting voted in by attacking Reichert. And yeah, this is going to create a mess. Honestly, I think it was done for the right reasons, but also had to be done because the Republicans have no party discipline. Democrats have a lot of party discipline, and that's why they do so well. And the only reason Republicans had like 20 candidates trying to run in 2020 is because they have no party discipline. So that it got divided up when they should have been able to say, hey, you guys, we can't do this. Some of you need to drop out, and we'll figure this out and reduce it to the best candidates. So this is a disaster for the Republican Party. If Semi Byrd gets the endorsement, it will irreparably divide that party to the point of irrelevance. Now, will it hurt Dave Reichert? I actually don't think so. I think if Dave Reichert doesn't get the party endorsement, it actually helps him beat Bob Ferguson. Because think about this. How can their tried and true method for attacking Dave Reichert is, oh, MAGA extremist. How can they actually paint someone as a MAGA right-wing extremist who wasn't even conservative enough in the eyes of his own party to get the Republican Party's endorsement? It kind of makes Dave Reichert a de facto independent candidate, which honestly, I think him and Mark Mullett should have run as independents and just gave their parties the middle finger for demanding purity of them. So we'll see what happens. But a lot of you say, well, a couple of you say he has to end the campaign if not endorsed. Nobody has to end their campaign. Some people might have signed a pledge to do that, but nobody is, this isn't binding in any stretch of the imagination. You just don't get the sole endorsement and support of the party, which I would also note, what does that even mean? They have no money. Though the state Republican Party does, it's not like there's this big pot of gold waiting for all the candidates who get the endorsement of the state party. There's just not. So it's not going to help their prospects, I don't think, very much. It's this interesting divide between people who are so focused on this weekend and securing a party support versus people who understand that the bigger issue is who can get past the primary and beat Bob Ferguson. Okay, let's get to some other questions and comments. Before I end the show by telling you, the biggest crisis we have in Washington State right now has just been solved. It has just been solved. Well, starting June 1st, the biggest crisis that we are facing as a state will be solved starting June 1st. So that's how we're going to end the show today. It's really awesome news. I'm so excited about it. Old Sub Sailor with a $20 super chat just because it's Thursday. Well, isn't that nice? Thank you. Lizzie says, $10 super chat. The saddest day of the week is Friday when I get all ready to settle into an undivided show and I remember it won't be there.
Aww.
That's nice, but that's also sad. Don't be sad. Matthew Cook, you're free to walk out and face potential consequences, talking about the students in school. If schools or districts don't suspend students, then you know exactly where that district stands. And look, you know, how do I put this in a way that makes sense? I admire people who are willing to face consequences for what they believe in. Even if I don't agree with their beliefs, if you're going to do something and face the consequences of it, I mean, more power to you. Now, if you're going to do something with violence or intimidation or harassment, then no, I'm not going to celebrate that activity. But if you have students who know that they could be suspended, but they're going to walk out of class anyway because they really, really are passionate about what's happening in Israel and in Gaza, which I tend to doubt. But hey, if you want to, this is America, you want to speak out about something, you want to face the consequences for that speech, you do you. And I'm going to do me, and I'm going to talk about it on my show. All right, Nathan Gates, any chance that students will ever protest taxes? That would be gangster. That would be the most gangster. Where's the student walkout protesting high taxes? I love it. Matt, if Brandy fires Nicole, we march on Kirkland.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, so I might just do it just for fun. Daniel's Circus Adventures. USA is the land of opportunity, not free rides for entitled criminals. And again, like, let's be clear. We have to bifurcate the conversation. If you truly have a legitimate asylum claim, our country, I mean, that's what our country values, should value, is people wanting to come here from other places or fleeing here because America is this land of opportunity and they're fleeing some societal ill, and our laws allow for that. But that's not what's happening at the southern border by any stretch of the imagination. That guy from Russia just proves it. Perfectly healthy looking young man who could get a job in a second. Instead, he's been coasting off the taxpayer teat in New York for a year, and now he's going to fly to Chicago looking for a new vibe, float off the taxpayer teat there, and then when he's sick of Chicago, he's going to go looking for sunshine and beaches in Los Angeles. And then we're going to see him as a TikTok influencer, and then he's going to be on some celebrity show like, I don't know, MILF Manor or something like that. And that's just it. Oh, man.
Amazing race.
Amazing race, 90-day fiance,
he'll have already gone across the country.
Something like that. I mean, he's basically running an amazing race on the taxpayer dime. Spencer Cole, I wish I could just live carefree like that dude, make friends and just travel the country. Unreal. It is really unreal, and it's really frustrating. Mm-hmm. T.C. Burton, asylum seekers must go to the next safest country to apply for asylum. You don't walk across 10 countries to get to the U.S. to seek asylum. And like, who is this guy? I walked across 10 countries to get here only to find suffering. What do you need? What is going to please you in this lifetime?
Which 10 countries disappointed you?
Yes, what do you need, right? It's a lot. It's a lot. Jeanette Rice says, personally, we need to stay out of other countries' businesses and focus on making ourselves healthy and happy. I'm sick of being everyone's bank, weapons supplier, shadow government, and policeman. Yeah, there's some truth in that. You're sounding very libertarian today, Jeanette. Brett says, I'm about ready to just go to another country, then come across the border illegally, probably do better than I am right now, working 40 hours a week trying to survive. Who's with me? Yeah, just go like to Mexico for a few months and then come right up in El Paso and through and connect with some NGO and get some money. Denise Young, can you imagine what Andrea from We Heart Seattle could do with $2 million? 100%.
Right.
100%. But it is the catch-22, like I said. Don't you agree that, what, if you let them live out on the streets homeless, then it's hurting society, right? They're going to still suck up taxpayer money through these very ineffective homeless service providers. I say that loosely. So it's like we're paying for them no matter what.
Right. Again, it's about the plan. Like, what's the plan?
Right.
Are we going to let them work? Are you going to give them visas? Like, are we just going to have them sit around mooching off of the taxpayers for a year before we let them work. Mm-hmm. Like, let's speed up this process. What do we need to do?
That's interesting, because that's not something I've ever heard brought up, which is, if you're going to continue to allow all these people in, then get a card in their hand that allows them to work. If that's the option, I don't think they should be here unless they have a legitimate claim and they go through the process legally. But if this is the situation, either we sit here and we pay for a guy to be jet setting across the country, or we give him a green card to be able to work. Gosh, I honestly, I mean, I don't want to bribe people. I don't want to reward them for doing something illegal, but it is putting us in an unwinnable, like a lose-lose situation. Mm-hmm. So what's the lesser of two evils?
We just speed this stinking process up.
Well, yeah, we need to close down illegal immigration and speed up legal immigration. Boo Boo Bear with a $9.99 super chat. If it wasn't for the great Inslee, I would have moved to Florida long ago. I'll be in Florida for vacation in 2 weeks. If it wasn't for the great Inslee, I would have moved to Florida long ago. Well, so wait, are you staying for Jay because you like him so much? I don't get it. That can't be it. There must be some reason. Victoria Totten, Brandy, I'm an old woman now. I've got lots of life experiences. I'm so proud when I see younger people like you. It gives me hope. You're the bomb, as they say. Never give up, my bestie. That's so nice. Thank you, Victoria. You're the bomb, as they say. What do we say when we're kids? Bomb.com. Did you say that? It's thebomb.com.
I don't. Well, yeah.
I mean, you're much older than me.
At your age, I don't know that I'd say it. But.
All right. I am so excited to get to our closing sanity check.
It's a good one.
I mean, we have all these crises in our state that have just been getting worse and worse and worse. And one of the things, I mean, I don't give the government credit a lot, but I am just so proud that they have finally addressed what I truly consider to be the biggest crisis facing our state. And that is foam to go containers. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. Gear up. We're making big changes, making big moves and improvements to the state of Washington. I just wanted to let you guys know that as of June 1st, all of our problems will be solved because the state of Washington's ban on foam to go containers finally goes into effect. This from Fox 13. Under a Washington law approved in 2021, the sale and distribution of single-use foam containers used for coffee and takeout will soon be banned starting June 1st. Everything from clamshell takeout containers to coffee cups to trays and other food and drink carriers will be outlawed, so long as those items are made from expanded polystyrene. According to the Department of Ecology, businesses can't use up existing inventory after the ban's date. So you can't even keep using it.
You have to throw it away? That makes sense.
Throw it away, and then we'll find turtles in the ocean. It will open up we'll open up a styrofoam container floating in the ocean. There'll just dead turtles in it with straws up their nose. However, the ban does not encompass packaging for raw, uncooked, or butchered meat. Cartons for vegetables, fruits, or egg cartons are also exempt. The ban on EPS started rolling out in June of 2023 with the ban on packing peanuts and other loose fill packaging items. So say, like I said, this is the final push in really solving this crisis of expanded polystyrene.
If I have veggies in my Thai takeout, can they put it in that container?
I'd like to see Inslee come and take it. You come and take it.
I just think it's the dumbest thing. It's so for show. This great thing. We banned foam containers.
We made them throw away all of them. Yeah. They didn't even do that with plastic bags. Bodegas and stuff, they got to use their excess inventory.
Right.
Like, at least do that, or else they're just throwing it into the trash, which is what you're trying to avoid, right?
Right. And you can still use them for all these things.
Yeah.
Anything raw, so veggies or eggs.
Yeah, give them to a veggie stand them down to Wilcox Farms and let them put some eggs in it. I'm going to go to the state capitol and I'm just going to carry one around. And if anybody asks me about it, I'm going to open it. It's going to have two pieces of asparagus and a hard-boiled egg. I'll be like, take it now. Come and take it. That has been our sanity check for today. Wow, let me just recenter my life right now. Did you guys really think that we'd solved anything? Did you really? Sorry to let you down. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. For subscribers, we'll see you on Sunday. We're going to talk about vaccines and a push just to get more Americans thinking independently and critically about what they put in their bodies and who they believe when it comes to what they should put in their bodies. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday, the rest of you back on the live show Monday at noon. If you have not become a subscriber already, it's an important election year. We're working real hard over here. If you want to support the content for just $5 a month, you can sign up at undividedpod.com. And if anyone wants to run a black market underground sales effort for cartons, I will get involved in that for sure. Black market for expanded polystyrene. I'm in.